Welcome to Academics Talk About the Chair. I'm Inga Mewburn, a professor at the Australian National University and editor of the Thesis Whisperer blog. This podcast series is a lockdown project because, well, why not? Australia is having the pandemic the rest of the world had last year. Here in Canberra, we can now have 2 hours of unstructured recreation outside every day with people who are not our cellmates, our family. And it's the pinnacle of my day. But during the rest of lockdown, we're watching a lot of Netflix, and in particular, we're watching a new Netflix series called The Chair. It's one of the very few TV shows to have ever attempted to depict what it's like to be an academic on the screen. But what do academics think of the show? We're four white female academics, and we loved it. We have so many thoughts and feelings about The Chair, and this podcast is our excuse to talk about it together and with you. We'll do a recap with all the spoilers, and it'll be pretty long, so fast forward if you don't want it, and then we'll talk about what's real, what's not, who had the best line, and most importantly, the outfits. But first, some introductions.
Hi, I'm Narelle Lemon. I'm an Associate Professor in Education at Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne, Australia. I blog and write and research about well-being and self-care for everybody, and I subscribe to Netflix to watch The Chair. And yes, for anyone asking, it is really true.
Hi, I'm Megan McPherson, and I'm precariously employed artist researcher and educator in art and intercultural research, and I work at the University of Melbourne.
Hi, I'm Anitra. I'm ex-co-chair of a School of Graphic Design at an art and design university in San Francisco, and I'm now a professional staff head of course design at RMIT Online. My voice sounds exactly the same as Inga's. Inga's husband does in fact claim to be able to tell the difference. He has had 24 years of practice, plenty of reasons to make sure that he doesn't slip up, and I'm going to test his claim.
As you can tell, none of us are film studies academics, so don't expect a deep, informed analysis grounded in literature from us. But wait! For a second week in a row, we're joined by an actual academic expert, Dr. Pauline Reynolds. You might know Pauline from her paper, Do You Want Me to Become a Social Piranha? Smarts and Sexism in College Women's Representation in the US TV show Greek. Well, you probably don't because it's kind of niche, but you should. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Pauline.
Hi, Inga. Pauline here. I'm a professor and recent ex-department chair. Although I'm an English lass, I work in the US at the University of Redlands. I write about representations of higher ed in pop culture. So Netflix did actually have this show in my recommendations.
In Academics Talk About the Chair, we take our cue from projects like Doctors Watch Grey's Anatomy. We compare our lived experience and knowledge of what it's like to work as an academic with a fictional account on the screen. We can't claim to have experienced everything about academia, so this is our point of view. We share any good finds and writings about The Chair in our correspondence section at the end of the show, where we also read out our reviews and any messages we get from you. Now on with the show. First up, it's our episode recap, and I'm doing the recap this episode. We're doing episode 3 called The Town Hall. We begin with Ji Yoon and Bill walking across campus. She's telling him to take the developing student protest seriously, and he isn't, of course. As a professionally employed, white, middle-aged man, it's likely he's had a pretty consequence-free life until now. Ji Yoon tries to fix his tie to make him neater, and he tries to make the moment romantic by telling her that she smells nice. He's clearly still all in on this romance front, but read the room, Bill. She's focused on the actual problems of the moment and pleads with him to be receptive to their input in the crisis meeting they're about to enter. He agrees, but we cut to the dean's office where Bill is anything but receptive to the dean and the university comms guy. And by the way, sidebar, I've had several conversations in the last couple of weeks with male colleagues who work these kinds of roles, and each one of them have remarked on how much they actually look like that guy, and they do.
That's
perfect casting. Bill won't validate the total absurdity of this meeting because he's not a Nazi. The dean switches tracks and asks him if he thinks it's okay to joke about Nazis. Although Bill says no, he immediately starts to tell a joke about Nazis, and he's so infuriating in this moment that I can't even. But he's also kind of right that it's an absurd situation, and his arrogance with people trying to help him is painful to watch, and you just want to smack him. The dean introduces Ronnie, the chief of communications, and Ronnie correctly calls it crisis of reputation management, which, again, was so true of university comms people that I had to pause this one to laugh. I then, when asked to craft an apology with Ronnie, Bill says, "I don't co-write," because, of course, he doesn't. Bill suggests he will just talk to the student and tells the dean, "You can't tell me what to do," or something similar, and pulls out the tenure card. He leaves, leaving Ji-Yoon to make excuses for him. Outside, Bill says he likes it when Ji-Yoon acts like his boss, and she points out correctly that she is his boss, and he just asks her on a date. Again, read the fucking room, Bill. She accuses him of being arrogant and thinking he's going to escape consequences before stalking off. Cut to black slide the chair, this time again over jaunty harpsichord music. We then see Ji-Yoon talking to her EA, one of the very few glimpses in the whole series, I think, of female support staff. I think we get her three or four times. Mm. What was her name again? Someone knew her name.
I forget, but she's an actor who often plays that harassed support person.
So she has that. Yeah, she's a bit typecast. She does it well, though. We don't learn her EA's name at this point, but she's clearly one of those fiercely competent people without whom the chair and maybe the department would fall apart. She admits to a dead end in dealing with Joan's office, and we can only imagine the hours of phone calls behind this statement. We're interrupted by Lila, who's worried about Bill's recommendation now being worthless. Now, some people might not realise how much of a huge deal this is for Lila as a PhD student. The patronage network of academia is strong, and you have to be really careful with it. And the best way for her to get a job is via Bill. And students, in my experience, will put up with all kinds of shit from a supervisor because they know how critical their recommendation is. And it's just one of the many fucked up things about academia that I hate, but I'm going to move on before I get too angry. Now, Ji-Yoon unwisely tells her not to talk to reporters, jumping to the defence of the department. And this is really not a good idea, but we'll get to that. We cut to Elliot pontificating about Melville on the stage in the lecture theatre. God, this one gave me flashbacks, I don't know about you, to boring lectures, and the students look really bored. They're either switched off and they're playing with their phones or they're dissatisfied. I think they're just really much more used to Yaz's engaging style. And Elliot's talking about Melville's correspondence with Nathaniel Hawthorne when one of the students punctures his droning self-assurance to ask whether Melville was a wife beater. Yaz looks a little nervously at the student and then at Elliot, clearly wondering how's he going to take it. Elliot is a bit miffed at being interrupted and very dismissively says that some feminist scholars have posited that, which immediately made me want to look up said feminist scholars. he tells the student that they should just attend to the text itself because they were concerned with Melville the author, not Melville the human being. But these Zoomers are not having a bar of that shit. Another student, this time a young black man, asks in a confused tone why Elliot brought up the human being friendship then, and Yaz is amused and starts watching the students take on Elliot like it's a tennis match. He continues to speak, the students are now murmuring, and Yaz steps in to calm things down by saying, "We'll cover the wife beating in my section." Elliot just looks confused, but the students seem more satisfied. Trouble is brewing.
Who hasn't wanted to say, "We'll cover the wife beating in my section"? Line.
We cut to Bill walking into his lecture room, which is empty, and Lila is writing on the blackboard that death and modernism is indefinitely postponed. Bill is surprised and then downhearted. He asks Lila to help him put up flyers for his town hall. See, she suggests a message on blackboard, clearly trying to head him off at this point and doing himself damage. But he says it's gone way beyond just the students in his class, which is true. Next, we cut to Daphne and her friends seeing the flyer advertising an open meeting to discuss the incident with the students. Daphne's friend, do we learn her name?
No.
I'm disappointed.
She's nameless.
She's in many scenes with Daphne. Is it because she's a woman of colour? I don't know. Anyway, Daphne's so far unnamed friend says wisely, "Your boy is toast." Ji-Yoon is studying the list. When Joan bursts in to say that she doesn't have any Wi-Fi, she wants Ji-Yoon's help with tech support, but Ji-Yoon says she's busy and will bring it up with the dean later. Joan flops on Ji-Yoon's couch and Ji-Yoon carefully asks whether she's read the evaluations yet. Joan says dryly that she has, but that she's too exciting, and Ji-Yoon just smiles. Joan gets then distracted by the portrait of an old white guy still on the wall. She sits up to study it more closely and says one of my other favourite lines in the show, "I gave him a hand job in his car when I got tenure to celebrate." Ji-Yoon looks confused and says, "That's the president of the college from like 1924. Maybe at this point she's wondering exactly how old Joan actually is, and then says, "What we're all thinking. Also, how is that a celebration for you?" To which Joan says, "Good point, he owes me an orgasm, whoever he is," which he does. Ji-Yoon asks about Bill's town hall. She's worried, but Joan says, "This is what he does. They love him." Joan has such a crush, and we all know she's wrong. Cuts to Daphna barging in on Bill in his office. She closes the door, and he's immediately worried about no one having visibility on him, a man in an office with a young student, a woman. She ignores him and throws the flyer on the desk, telling him this will be a bloodbath. She then points out so-called jokes related to Hitler are their own special category and starts giving him some broader context, which honestly he should fucking know. Only a few lines into this rant, Ji-Yoon barges in, telling Bill that of course intent matters, and then stops, momentarily confused about Bill being in a room with a female student with the door closed. Daphna tells Ji-Yoon she was just telling Bill the same thing. Ji-Yoon smiles at her and then turns to Bill with a "what the fuck are you doing now" expression on her face, and we are all Ji-Yoon at this moment. He just looks guilty. There's an awkward pause before Daphna leaves. Ji-Yoon closes the door and bursts out, "What the fuck are you doing?" And he defends his behaviour and then starts trying to take her hand, presumably to reassure her that there's nothing going on between him and Daphna and that she doesn't need to be jealous, which is, of course, all kinds of wrong, Bill. She snatches her hand away saying, "What?" But then we get the impression she also likes the reassurance that she's his bae, maybe, and she's such a good actress that she managed to somehow signal both in the way that's only Sandra Oh can. Bill looks confused in that way that men do when they can't understand a woman having mixed feelings and feelings that may not be just all about him. She then points at him and says, "You're trouble," and he annoyingly takes this as a compliment. Ji-Yoon has bigger problems to sort out, as per fucking usual, one of which is the babysitter for Juju. Bill agrees to do it. Cut to Joan trying to get tech support for her Wi-Fi. The sign next to the desk, by the way, with the IT guys on it, has lost its P, so it reads Hell Desk, Hell, which amused Mr. Thesis Whisperer and I very much. Mr. Thesis Whisperer was working help desk when we first met, by the way. Nerd One asks her what's wrong with her Wi-Fi. Honestly, how would Joan fucking know? She says the problem is that there isn't any, and he tells her she needs to fill in the paperwork to get a booster installed. Joan closes her eyes and sighs. And she is all of us in this moment. She's finally found a human being to fix her problem, and all he wants is another form to give him permission to do it. She mutters okay and walks off. And we linger for a moment on Nerd 2, who hasn't spoken at all, but watches Joan storm off with interest and raised eyebrows. We're back with Joan reading her evals, and I paused it to see what the student said actually, and it said, "I believe her goal is to make us suffer. Her deadlines run reasonable. Without fail, her assignments put me to sleep," which, lol, anyone who's had student evals has had something like this written about them. I just want to pause for a type nerd moment because we have to have one of those, Anitra. Why are forms always so bad in universities, and would they be better if they didn't use Times New Roman? Please feel free to rant.
All right, I'll take it from there. They are always so bad and they're impossible to fill out. Times New Roman was designed for the newspaper The Times, and it was designed to fit more words into the Times newspaper column. So it's kind of a 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag sort of typographic solution. It's default. It's boring. The letter forms are not elegant, and the kerning table sucks. And if you want to talk about kerning tables anytime, I'm happy to talk about them. So I went to the literature about this. According to the form book, which is a book that I have that's just about designing forms. Like, that's all it is. My husband bought it for me in Maastricht, "Always Marry a Man Who Gets You." This book doesn't even get to the typefaces until page 130. That's how nerdy it is.
Wow.
I love it very, very much. Yeah, it's very deep. It has this to say about the typefaces, the best ones. The best faces are those which the letterforms can be easily distinguished from each other, other than blending together. And I think that's partly why Times New Roman is a bad choice. So it's designed to act as body copy so that your eye scans it quickly. It's not designed to sit and stand on its own.
Mm.
Anyway, it's bad. It needs to stop. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
Okay. Now, the next scene is a classic. And I think the one that most people who watch The Chair remember with fondness. In an act of rebellion, Joan lights a match and starts setting fire to the evaluations while singing, "Thank you." Enjoying it now, she starts to light up the rest of the pile, dumping them in the bin while humming. The fire grows and rapidly starts looking like it's just a little bit out of control. Joan panics and throws a coat over it. And I laughed that she watched the bin for a moment, saw that it sort of stopped, and then just sat down prepared to go on with the rest of her work. And we know it's about to explode, but she clearly thinks she's done enough to settle it down, visual metaphor alert. And the coat dramatically catches fire. And honestly, I worried Joan was about to die or burn the whole place down at this point. But it's not that kind of show. A quick cut back to Nerd 2, who's clearly come to her office to try and help. And that's against the regs, I think. And this is a small act of kindness from a professional staff member who's probably watched many academics crying with frustration over their Wi-Fi. And this happens all the time in universities where people make it work, despite the intolerable systems that we work within. And I liked him immediately. He hears a fire alarm going off and starts running. He comes in to find Joan, half covered in fire extinguisher foam, still spraying it wildly around the office. She's managed to put the fire out, but it's a huge mess, and so is she. There's foam on her clothes, in her hair, and even over her glasses. An IT nerd just looks at her for a beat, realizes he doesn't need to save her, decides not to comment on the foam, and just says, "I heard your internet is down." She's still breathing hard, holding the fire extinguisher, but says, "Wonderful, come in." She knows that when a professional staff member offers to help you off books, you don't let a bunch of foam get in the way from saying yes immediately. We cut to a few minutes later where he's got her online. Now, looking at the screen, it looks like all he had to do was click on the Wi-Fi bar and select the right network. And this is so jarring, right? Being just too faffy to figure this out. And also imagine what had happened if she'd got the form and filled it in for the booster, waited all that time to get it delivered, and only to find out that it didn't actually solve the problem. And how often has this happened in my life? Oh, my God, I can't even think about it. And I bet the IT guy figured this out as soon as he saw her and kindly thought he'd save her all that effort. What a fucking legend. Now, a little digression. There's two types of university IT guy, and they're almost all guys. There's the one that doesn't care about your problem and the one that goes above and beyond, bending the laws of space-time to fix your problem where appropriate. He even teaches you how to fix the problem if you can encounter it again. Now, I count myself lucky to be married to the second type of IT guy. And actually, it's a funny story. We worked out that we'd met years before we actually met, which was at a party at Anitra's house, actually, when he helped me with a failed floppy disk and taught me how to do a backup on the RMIT computer system. This was in 1993, about 4 years before we met for realsies, and I remembered him because I thought he was cute. And I should have asked him out then and saved me from dating a lot of bills, quite frankly. So anyway, hooray for IT guys, the good ones. Back to Joan. She asks where the IT guy has been all her life, and he says prosaically, the IT department. And she asks him if he knows about the Rate My Professor site because she has to listen to her students' criticisms. He says why in a way that's really funny, and I think Narelle might unpack this later. He actually gives her really good advice here, and you can see her connecting with him, and it's the start of a lovely friendship, and he's kind of flirting with her, I think, in an awkward way. Mm. We would call this in the romance literature a May-autumn romance.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah. Old woman, younger man.
Yeah. Perhaps it's the romance.
Oh.
There you go. She asks him to read out one of the reviews on Rate My Professors because the type's too small, and he says it's a student saying all Humpty, no Dumpty. And she asks him if that's what she thinks it is, and he says yes. And then he reads out another one. She's what I think about when I'm trying not to come in my girlfriend. She's incensed and says she wants to track this student down. And he says that would be illegal though, and she just looks at him like, hold my beer. I love her so much. I just love her so much. Meanwhile, Ji Yoon is talking to Elliot about Yaz's suggestions for reviewers of her tenure application. GU mentions the need to get it to people who will be receptive to her point of view, and Elliot says that he will send it to respected scholars who will review it objectively, i.e. people like him who don't have any truck with this researcher subjectivity nonsense. Sidebar, this is a problem with thesis examination in the humanities. If you don't get it to scholars who respect the method and the theories the students are dealing with, it's you're toast, basically. And I'm really worried about Yaz now, because like GU, and I can see what's coming. Cut to Ji Yoon having dinner with the dean and his wife. And his wife, by the way, is just so awful. She's the kind of white feminist awfulness where they're completely unconscious of their privilege and condescending to any woman of colour. She studied literature and is seemingly supportive of Ji Yoon, but actually just as power hungry and manipulative as a white guy she's married to. She's going to strong arm Ji Yoon into her choice for the distinguished lecture series with someone that she met at the farmer's market, if you can believe it. And that one made me laugh so much, the farmer's market, just perfect. She's thrilled. It's David Duchovny. And then the dean says, ancient Scully himself, and his wife quickly corrects him to Mulder. Clearly she has a little crush. And Ji Yoon is just astonished. And she says, the actor, in the actual what the fuck tones. And the dean tells her that she needs to find David Duchovny an office, and she just sits there stunned. Cut to Juju and Bill talking while Juju brushes her teeth. She says, what's it like to be you? And he answers honestly that it's a mixed bag, which is pretty true. Perceptive, Bill. She starts with the random kind of conversations that kids that age do, perceptive questions interspersed with random facts. And I really love this age. I think it's the high tide mark of children. And if I could rerun my kid being 7 to 11 again, I would do it in a heartbeat. She's sweet and serious and just a little bit weird. And to his credit, unlike the other babysitter we met, he's taking it all in his stride and just folds towels, casting an affectionate and longing look at GU's bent at the same time. And oh my heart, romance not a moment at this point. Juju asks him to read her favourite book and then tells him it has naked pictures in it, and he's just going with the flow at this point. Now, it turns out that her favourite book is The Family of Man, and I looked it up in Wikipedia, and again, such a perfect choice. It's actually a catalogue from an art exhibition from 1955, and in my experience, it's exactly the kind of book academics buy for their kids, entirely too serious and arty. And no wonder Juju, I suspect, is being bullied at school. She's trained to be sensitive and thoughtful, and honestly, only children of academics, they have no hope. Bill is great in this moment with Juju. He doesn't judge. He just listens and gives her honest answers, including that marriage is a bourgeois institution. Do you know what that is? And she doesn't take the bait. And in that very singular way kids do, just starts telling him about how she didn't know her birth mother. And it's kind of sad, but not. The kid's such a great actor. And he gently tells her how much her mother loves her by telling her stories about Ji Yoon and the time before she was adopted, about how she kept a car seat ready by the door. He's very empathetic and sigh, I want to hate him so much. But now that he's being all sensitive and supportive, it's pushing all of my buttons. And Juju tells him that she's going to lead the class for the Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, and that she wants to construct an altar for his dead wife's soul to find him. He takes it in the spirit Juju intends it, and she continues to turn pages, warning him we're about to see another penis as he struggles not to laugh. We cut to Ji Yoon arguing with the dean about his choice to put David Duchovny ahead of the staff who actually need support, saying, you can't just pretend he's an academic. And the dean says he almost got his PhD, to which she snaps back, which is the same thing as not having a PhD. And the first time me and Mr. Thesis Whisperer watched this, we laughed so much. We had to stop and laugh because he's only been listening to me talking about people almost having their PhD for 17 years now. Ji Yoon points out that David Duchovny is not a recognisable name to the Zoomers who are on TikTok and don't watch 1990s TV shows. So true. Mm-hmm. The dean reminds her that it's all about butts in seats and that creative writing is doing well because people want to be able to produce content. Ji Yoon is outraged and demands that he at least get a real writer, and the dean snidely tells her Duchovny is a New York Times best-selling writer, which, spoiler alert, he actually is. Oh, my God. Ji Yoon comes home to find Bill holding Juju's hand while she sleeps. It's a tender moment. Then we find out he's done her dishes, love, and she asks him if he's practiced what he's going to say at his town hall, but he just does a joke apology and starts singing that song from the wartime, I think it's the wartime Broadway show Cabaret, and I'm hating him again instantly.
I thought it was Spring Time for Hitler.
Oh, was it? Yes. Anyway, it's so hateable. I'm like, God. I'm like, I got Bill Whiplash this episode, seriously. And she's annoyed and she's annoyed. He tells her David Duchovny is a best-selling author and they look at his mobile. Ji-Yoon is astonished to find out that David Duchovny was actually Harold Bloom's advisee at Yale and is impressed despite herself. And then she says, oh, he did his thesis about Beckett like you. And Bill is offended and says no and gets upset at her ogling half-naked pictures of Duchovny online and takes the phone back. And she says, oh, he's in shape. It's the next day. And it's snowing. Lovely red brick pampas shots. The head of comms is complaining to the dean about not being able to set up some tents for a fundraising event because the students have gathered to hear Bill speak. The dean is irritated and asks him to fetch the campus police. Uh-oh. We're back with Bill starting his town hall. Oh, Bill. Lila and Ji-Yoon watch on worry. And Bill, he does pretty well initially, pointing out that he's not a Nazi and that Nazis hate professors because they're enemies of thought. And I had a real moment with this one because I often feel like politicians hate us because they're enemies of thought. Anyway, I feel this way a lot. He starts lecturing and the students start correcting him and they point out the unequal power relations in the moment. He's managing, but it's getting hard and he gets defensive and, oh, Bill, they ask for an apology and he gives them the shitty non-apology about their feelings. And one guy perceptively says, you're minimising your responsibility by saying you're sorry for how we feel. The dean comes and the students start directing their anger at him for not coming to the town hall about racism last week. Bill pleads with the crowd that it's two separate issues, is it though? And it gets rowdy. They start chanting. Lila and Ji-Yoon look at each other. They know it's over. Bill doesn't though. And gazes hopelessly at the chanting crowd and we cut to credits. Okay, short reaction from each of you. What did you think of the episode, Megan?
Still hate Bill.
What was that?
And I love the line that Ji-Yoon had. This is about if you're one of those men who thinks when something like this happens, he can just dust himself off and walk away.
Yep. Yeah. In a nutshell.
You need to have seen Megan shrug just then. It's quite a shrug.
It's serious.
It definitely
you get whiplash from the shrug.
Yeah. Anitra.
You said short reaction. I just realized how long my reaction is.
Give me a short one.
I both love and hate Bill in this episode. Like, you're cute, but you're dumb. You know what I mean? Like, it swings so hard, and I love that it does. And I just want to say that tiny look that he gives her bed, like, it's her bed, it's your crush's bed, bed equals sex. That's a thing. But you know he's loving the books piled up on it, that he loves her mind.
Yeah, I know. So, that one got me too in the feels. Yeah.
I had how to about you? Watch it a couple of times. Full confession.
Narelle, what about you?
So many great moments in this episode. I love the student evaluation scene, the IT department, the comment of I wouldn't overanalyze it from the ID department, telling Joan how to consider her evaluations. The relationship between Juju and Bill, touching, and I really love where that's going. The place of student voice, listening, equity, leadership. And particularly leadership are disconnected and don't stand up for their staff and they just sit back and watch it unravel when they know they could have intervened and perhaps done some coaching. Choices of words, responsibility of apologising for your feelings, the escalation. There's so many layers to this episode.
How about you, Pauline?
I love the attention to detail in this episode. So, you know, when Yaz is in the classroom, for example, there's white men on the walls as well as Elliot behind the lectern, and in Ji-Yoon's office, white men on the walls again, looming over her and Joan. So I like that. I paused and looked at the list that Ji-Yoon has with all the salaries on there. And I love the fact that on the piece of paper that Joan's salary is less than the other two chaps, Elliot and the other chap. I love that attention to detail. I just wish actually that they'd put rank on there as well.
But yes.
Can't have it all. I did love in the classroom scene the students' questioning of Elliot. And I kind of interpreted that a little differently than Inga, because I thought that Yaz loved it, that she was excited that they were challenging him. And I think at the end, I actually thought that Bill might actually discuss his way out of it. And it became one of the rare times that I found myself rooting for him. But he completely blew it when he got defensive.
All right, team, let's dig a little deeper then. So what was the most realistic scene from your point of view, and what did it accurately capture or critique about academic life? You first, Narelle.
I really liked the conversation between Laurie, who's the EA to Ji-Yoon, and it was the comment about Jazz has 8,000 Twitter followers, so I've posted that to the department's website. So there's this big thing about the networked academic, the institution leveraging the academic who has personally built up their profile, right? They're the people who have done all the work in terms of reaching out, sharing, reciprocity, all those sorts of aspects. Yet, and then the institution just walks in and goes, yes, we'll leverage this, but they never support you to do this work. So that really was a really nice acknowledgement to the complexity of the networked academic, which all of us can nod to as we're active in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you're just as likely to get in trouble in a heartbeat if you do something wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about you, Anitra?
Well, first can I say, Narelle, thank you for finding out the name of the executive assistant. Now we know it's Laurie.
Yes.
It's a good name for the executive assistant. I had two. I had the patient IT desk guy and Joan. So our IT guy at RMITO just left. And in his last all hands, like the whole company started on Zoom, of course, chanting his name. Like they were just going, Pat, 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 Pat. Like he had lots of fans because he was that kind of IT guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to have a global cohort at my last job, and we had a 24-hour help desk, and I often called them late at night, California time. I'm sure they just wanted to play their video games or whatever, but they're always really good and they really helped me out. And then having been on both sides, the professional staff and faculty divide, I could relate really hard to both sides of that crisis management scene. Like Bill really needs like Olivia Pope level help here, right?
Yes.
Like someone who can handle it, and he doesn't have it. Like the guy seems kind of like a bit of a tool, to be honest, with all apologies to your friends who are in comms, Inga.
Oh, no, sure, we only noticed like that they looked like him.
Oh, okay. All right. Did like not that him. They acted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I've been Bill when professional staff tell me things that I don't really maybe want to hear, and they get that manage the difficult talent tone that the guy uses here, which is really insulting, and I try never to do that. Now I'm on the other side of the fence, all right? But, like, it's really not okay what Bill was doing either, because this is why the guy uses the tone. Like, you know, for fuck's sake, other people, they have expertise. Try listening for once. Yeah. I love Bill. I hate Bill. I just felt more like Megan this episode. I'm like, this is how it feels to be Megan the whole time. Anyway, I digress.
How about you, Megan?
I don't co-write, Bill says to Dan about the offer for Ronnie to help write the apology. I just think that's so perfect. But it's very much a disciplinary response as well. There's not much co-writing in English departments.
Mm-hmm.
And also the challenge to academic freedoms. I am tenured. I think the academic world has changed in the last, you know, 15 years.
Yes, and I think Bill finds that out, doesn't he?
I think so.
No spoilers, but spoilers. Like, tenure doesn't mean what it used to mean. Yeah. But you can see here that he still thinks it's protection, right?
Yeah.
How about you, Pauline?
I'm going to pick things that nobody else has said. So I think that, you know, when Ji-Yoon is talking to Lila and she does the whole don't talk to the media comment, I think for me, yeah, I thought that was very realistic because I think that chairs have no training, in my experience, to deal with these kind of issues. And so she reacted in the moment emotionally. Oh, God, no, don't talk to them. She wasn't trying to give her advice about, you know, whether or not she should, really. It's just like, oh, God, you don't want to deal with that in your life kind of thing. Before I became chair, my school had never had chairs before, and our dean at the time reorganized us into three departments. And when he asked me to be chair, I said, I've never even been to a department meeting, let alone led one. So I asked to go to some chair training.
Is there such a thing?
There is.
Oh, you know, no.
Yes.
Oh,
what?
Yes.
Oh, I never got need that. That here.
It's called, I think it's ACE, Yeah, the ACE, they do various different administrative level training sessions. So for chair, for deans, for other senior administrators, things like that. I do not recall them ever talking about media. And it was a long time ago, though, so perhaps I've just forgotten and I didn't use it. So. But I think we're woefully ill-prepared for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I have to agree. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to move on now to unpicking the most unrealistic details or scenes. And I'm also really interested, do you wish they were true? So this time you first, Megan.
When Ji-Yoon says to the dean, you know, the actor, David Duchovny? Who else could it be? It's like, really? And then I really loved how Juju says to Bill, what's it like to be you? That's such an on-point question.
It's the question we all want to ask, really, isn't it?
Yeah, what is it like to be Bill?
What
really?
See, I don't want to waste my time. Not that interested.
What was that British TV show for Magic Roundabout? It's like the Magic Roundabout in his head. Dun, 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 dun. So psychedelic circles.
I mean, it's like the Roundabout's kind of a modernist classic, perhaps. It's a modernist goer. It's a little bit too frou-frou.
I wanted to ask you all, is it the Dean's wife? Because
I'm not sure.
He calls her... She calls him Paul and he calls her Mrs. Whitehead and refers to the – I think he refers to her as being a trustee who's endowed the
the chair, the
yeah, the lecture series.
Yeah.
And so I just assumed it was his wife.
Yeah, so did I.
Wow.
You see, I thought it was the benefactor. Both? And then you said the wife and I'm thinking, I don't understand.
Well, I mean, wow. I just imagine if he was married, it would be to someone like that.
Maybe yeah, that's me too. They really did have a wow, there's so many things to unpick about that. Wow.
Yeah, I know, right.
And wow.
He could call her Mrs. Whitehead, right? Like Ken's and his mother.
Maybe we're picking up on a vibe.
Ooh. Are you shipping?
I mean, there's some layers there, including how we read that relationship. Wow, you just blew my mind, Pauline.
Perhaps our listeners can respond to whether or not, you know, wife or not.
All right, Anitra, how about you?
I was going to say the scene with Dean Larson's wife, but now I'm not going to say it. And I didn't know her name and I didn't want to. It's so horrible. But I guess Mrs. Whitehead, like, it's so obviously a stupid idea. Like, I get that these people exist, but she seemed very overplayed and like a stereotype to me. And I guess I thought about it a bit and thought, well, the rest of so is sort of so seemingly naturalistic. I mean, it's not, but that sort of stuck out as being kind of artificial to me. But having said that, people get hired in academia for dubious reasons all the time. So this is possibly quite real. Anyway.
I don't know. As an architecture academic, the number of times that famous architects were hired, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Could they teach? I'm not going to comment. I don't want to get sued.
Right. That's what I mean.
Honestly.
I've seen that happen too, but not so obviously like dubious, not so obviously out of left field, but hey, English department.
I've seen it very obviously dubious.
He's
in
almost
a university.
Got a PhD, okay?
He's almost got one. And so many of these famous architects almost had one as well, Megan.
I know.
And he's so famous, the kids are going to love him because he was in a TV show 30 years ago.
That seems really recent to me, Pauline. I'm just saying.
But they weren't even born.
No.
Okay, not feeling old now. That's,
yeah.
I love the X-Files.
Narelle, how about you?
The moment where Ji-Yoon and Bill are walking across the campus surrounded by the grand buildings, but he's just not landing the severity of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And Ji-Yoon says, you know what? They can smell from a mile away this little streak of arrogance that you have just got going on here. And Bill's just like, but I'm not a Nazi. Ji-Yoon's like, this is not about being a Nazi. And she's got the finger going. And this is like, you know, the stern boss slash mother slash nearly girlfriend wife, just get your fucking shit together. And he's like, you know, this is not about you being a Nazi. This is about you being one of those men who when something like this happens, thinks he can just dust himself off and walk away without any fucking sense of consequence. And I just cue, hello, Ji-Yoon, high five, great. But I really want to know, did these conversations really happen in person, or are they more likely to happen behind people's back?
Mm. Like not actually said to them directly.
That's the right.
That they should be. Like that was. Like yeah. That was wish fulfillment for me.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because yeah. you can hear someone saying that behind someone's back. But mm-hmm. yeah, so it's it. And I just want to say, oh, seriously, Bill, like at this moment I've been your fan, but I'm wavering. I'm wavering here. And I'm wondering, is this the writing around the comedy? You know, mm-hmm. is this the moment where we just all go, for fucking sake, grow up, Bill? Mm-hmm. Is there a transition? What's happening here? So, another one for me, lots of layers, but I'm like serious high five to Ji-Yoon and just saying it to his face and everything that we all wanted to have said to him.
Or is it like the romance bit that Inga has fun talking about, you know, thinking about that as a prospective partner, that she's asking him to think about what does it mean to be a man? Mm. And what kind of man are you because of what kind of man I want you to be and that I'm interested in?
Oh,
yeah, well, this is definitely a no-way beat. Mm. You know, this is if the previous episode was the high point, this is where the writer's holding a balloon and just puncturing it with a pin and, you know, it's all going sideways and Ji-Yoon's just wondering, why am I here? But, yes, interesting. Pauline, what do you think?
The unrealistic stuff?
Yeah.
So as chair that Ji-Yoon has a completely empty desk, she has flipping nothing on her desk. She was holding that little – she has that, like, little folder with one piece of paper in it with the salary on it, I think. And the screen on her computer is not on. It's Ugh. Not on. I think that is completely unrealistic that as chair, who's meant to have mountains of work, she's sitting at her desk, the computer isn't on, and she has one piece of paper.
She has to do all of her work at home, though. She has to do all of her work late at night when Juju's asleep because she doesn't get time because everyone's just so annoying, Bill.
That's a good point. Perhaps it's all on Dropbox or some kind of university.
Yeah, maybe she's digitally disrupted, Pauline, and we just, you know, she's already
that's a good point. Aside.
She's doing paperless really well.
I was comparing it to my desk as chair because I had, you know, I had lists in different places, different things. Okay. I also thought that the so as a male professor who I experienced in him in the show as not being interested in Daphne, but that he knows that she's interested in him, that he doesn't reopen the door after she closes it is completely unrealistic. I was like, you know, all the men I know here, if that, you know, thinking about if that moment happened, that door is swiftly opening because they don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that's really changed in the last 10 years that men are like, I'm keeping that door open. I don't want to have that conversation with management later. Yeah.
And then I had one other small unrealistic thing, I think. I couldn't believe that there was actually a fire extinguisher in the basement window.
We are relieved, though, because we don't want anything to happen to Joan.
We do not.
All right, team. For you, what was the funniest scene or perhaps the most touching moment? Narelle.
I'm going to leave the evaluations burn to Anitra.
Thank you, Narelle.
Because FYI, I thought it was gold. Fabulous. But I love the relationship and where this goes across the IT dude, who's Horatio. I spent some time finding people's names out for this episode.
Good for you.
Rewind, play,
really did.
And the relationship between Horatio and Joan and what's burning here, I found it quite funny and cute and awkward, but I can't look away. It's really nice. And I just think the conversations that go on, you know, Horatio, I hear your internet is down, and Joan's talking about, where have you been all my life? you know, and mumbles, and there's all these sorts of things going on. And there's just banter that's between them. And, you know, Horatio helping Joan out in terms of the myprofessors.com and seriously trying to protect her while he's reading through these comments and what he shares back and what that looks like. And that protection from the student criticism and how that goes. So I found that scene absolutely hilarious and just gorgeous.
Yeah, touching and hilarious at the same time. Mm. I think this is this show at its best, really, that kind of line between funny and poignant. Anitra, how about you?
Yeah, well, 100% Joan burning the evals. Like, I just laugh so hard. And I... All right, full confession. I do feel like printing out some of the course design evals and burning them as well. Like, my boss listens to this and, like, I do read them. I know they help. Feedback's a gift. I know all that. But I felt Joan in this moment so much. And I just wanted to tell you a little story about the Rate My Professor thing, because a friend of mine, who shall remain nameless, got a hot pepper on Rate My Professor, which means that you are hot. For being good looking. And it really pissed him off. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me with this? As a woman, I don't know, I dread like them commenting on my weight or the way I dress or mm-hmm. and he's complaining about a chili pepper. Like, take the chili pepper.
Like, is he why? Like, don't objectify me?
Yeah, but he was like, that's exactly it. Like, he hated it for the same reason a woman would hate it. Like, genuine hate. Like, I'm teaching here and you're judging me by my looks. It's really insulting. And he's an amazing teacher, so I kind of get it. Like, I still don't get it. No, take the chili pepper.
Yeah, I would take it. Megan, how about you?
Well, I thought the funniest scene was Joan and her fire, and I'm calling it her fire, and it made me look at her desk really quite closely. And did you realise that there's a open bottle of Maker's Mark on her desk?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No.
And what she does with it as well.
And it's in the glass, and then she puts it into the fire. She's dousing the fire with alcohol. So that's why there's a huge fire. It's just flambéed. The evaluations, which is a beautiful thing. As someone who's done a PhD on student feedback and how students understand the feedback that they have and get, what we think people are saying to us and what we perceive is somewhat different sometimes than what they expect that they're saying. So, you know, there can be levels of understanding here, and there's, you know, there's a space in between that communication that many things happen.
But Joan just burns it all down.
Flambé.
Do we think Joan's an alcoholic at this point?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She gets pickles. Joan drunk. Remember?
Functional.
Yeah. Functional alcoholic. Okay. Yeah. All right, where am I up to? Pauline, how about you?
Well, I do love the Joan scene too. It's the layers. So it really is that it's on fire, then she throws the alcohol on it to put it out ostensibly, resulting in a bigger blaze, then the coat, phew, then the coat goes on fire, and then we have all the foam in her hair and Horatio. And actually, because his name is Horatio, it's kind of romantic, actually, Horatio. It makes him sound dashing.
Like he's a hero.
Yeah, exactly. He's our hero, Horatio. And he comes to her rescue, and it's like she's holding the hose. She's got the fire extinguisher foam everywhere and in her hair. I just love that. I suppose I was thinking about The Office though as well. It just made me think that I did notice randomly at some time that she does have windows in there, and I do know that a lot of my colleagues would very much like windows, so perhaps the basement office isn't actually too bad.
Oh, poor Joan.
Oh, it's just so good.
Did you want to talk about Yaz's enjoyment of the students' questioning?
Sure, I could do that. Yeah, well, I was thinking that Dalton wrote about faculty in movies This is like a 2007 piece. I think she may have got a more up-to-date edition, but I don't know the date of it. And in that, she talks about professors as being bad teachers. And that some of the reasons for that is that they engage in sexual escapades and hijinks, or ridiculous hijinks, she says.
In movies, right.
Yeah, right. And but the thing, yes, so that's movies. So I think here that, yes, we do have with Elliot a bad teacher, but he's just actually boring the students to death. He's, I'm not sure he's enjoying any sexual escapades at all.
No, absolutely not. So there's sort of no cliche or trope there around him. He's just bad in a way that is absolutely realistically ordinarily bad. Yeah, true. Okay, team, best lines and why? Megan, you first.
I really like Juju's favourite book, and in the book, The Family of Man, it's sitting on a page that has a quote on it, and the quote is, "With all beings and all things, we shall be as relatives," which I thought was really sweet and beautiful and kind of joyous in the situation that we're in. It's all about relations and connectedness and dysfunction in family life and in academic life. And, you know, I might like Bill in the scene.
What? Chink in the armour.
But then again, he's acting like the child man that he is, you know, mm-hmm. and that interest is very much about, you know, childlike interest in each other, you know, and, you know, it's what yeah, it's just, you know. So, you know.
Yeah, they might be right about that. He can sit with at her level, like he can get to her level of kind of random weirdness and sit with that in a way that most adults can't because they've left it behind, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my other favourite is students want to produce content, which is the dean to GM. And I'm just thinking, so what else do they produce? Oh, yeah. I couldn't kind of work it out, like, you know. Content. What are you saying here?
I think he means not write essays.
But that's still content. You know, apparently not. You know.
They don't look at it that way. I mean, imagine if everything was like a Medium post or something, like how much more.
Well, I guess that's where how I took that comment is that sometimes when I talk about the blog, I know, or my podcast, I do refer to it as content, and I say, oh, you know, got to keep the content up. It doesn't get referred to as writing as much as it gets referred to as content when you talk about stuff for the web. So I read that as, you know, her being a bit snobby about forms of writing that aren't novels, actually.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting because I'm doing a lot of subject development at the moment, and it's all about the content. You know, it's
we don't like to call it content at RMIT Online. Because it's an experience. We're not creating content.
Oh, you're creating an experience.
Well, you are. Content? That's why we're called student experience. But well, I mean, content is just chunks of content, right? Like an experience is a structured series of steps that leads you to understanding, which is what a lecture is.
I love being an academic. You can have arguments about these kind of words days.
But now we have to say with a content. And that's a whole Medium post right there. Wait, sorry, paper. Never mind. Content.
Anita, your favourite line?
That scene with Bill was my favourite. And just Gigi saying, we're about to see another penis. Like, where did they find this kid? Like, just the way she said it, she's just amazing. And she needs to have her own Emmy. And that made me laugh. And I thought it was
I know, she needs her own show. She's incredible. Yeah, that's the way she delivered that line was just so good. We're, you know, absolutely perfect, pitch perfect.
Cats, the show could be a follow-up to The Chair. It's about being a child of an academic.
It might not be a gentle comedy drama, though.
It may not. How about you, Narelle?
I had a number, but I'm going to just focus on one, which was Bill's comment about I don't co-write, and it's that discussion with Ronnie. I was good on names. Ronnie, the chief of communications or the crisis manager or reputation management. I mean, that whole line just the layers of that, I don't co-write. How many academics say that? How many academics say they don't co-write yet demand their names to be on papers and all the bad behavior that we know that goes on and sitting there. But then I just love that it's with the crisis manager, and I can just imagine this whole conversation going on in, you know, real life happening in our institutions and that refusal to write with him to save himself. So, yeah, it was gold. I really liked it.
How about you, Pauline?
I'm going to pick the moment in June's office when she says to Joan, "How is that a celebration for you?" To the way she pleasured the former dean to celebrate her tenure, right? I love that. That really made me laugh out loud.
Oh, dear. Okay. So we've got to our final segment already. Now it's our most important segment, I think. We're going to talk about the outfit. So I'm going to start us off. My vote goes to Joan again this time, and it's that scene where she's getting IT help and setting fire to her evals, and she's wearing a sloppy green cardi over a red kilt. It's just endearingly clumsy and shapeless, and it's very Joan. And the idea of Joan as a sort of functional alcoholic now, all her outfits make sense to me, you know, in a new way. But how about you, Megan?
Well, I've got a couple of style statements this week, and the first one is Juju. Juju's Hello Kitty PJs. They're fantastic. I want some.
But not if you're boycotting Sanrio. Like,
exactly.
Not okay.
And also during the town hall scene, all the scarves that the students are wearing, there's, you know, such a strong style game going on there.
Well, that's I didn't even notice that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a good shout out, Megan.
How about you, Anitra?
Well, I've got two, because Lila, you can't ever beat Lila in every episode. She's got the black skivvy, black glasses, black tailored coat. That coat's beautiful. She's always on point. Mm-hmm. She could be a design teacher. Like, that is real design teacher girl.
It is design teacher look.
Yeah,
definitely.
I was loving it. And then
is that just wear black? Is design teacher look just wear black?
Yes, pretty but much. Black, but play with textures, Pauline.
Okay.
Tailoring. Can't just be black.
Been schooled.
And some tailoring, the gorgeous tailoring.
Yeah. It's that's an expensive coat. I don't have my black rim glasses on. Okay. So, the black rim glasses, that's a thing. Megan. And then there's a shout out to Diyun with that jacket and buttoned up white shirt, which carries her through a bad day in the office, a terrible dinner with her boss, and it still looks unstained and super cute with the jacket off and the arms pushed up at home time when she's talking to her crush. And, like, we're all looking for that elusive all-day outfit, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we salute you for that.
Yeah, again, something I didn't notice, but well done, Diyun. Yeah.
But that I would say, Anitra, she has changed that shirt 3 times.
Has she, though? I mean
that she's got people. Sandra,
oh, yeah, no, Sandra she has to. I'm like, that's just not realistic. No, it's not.
But we wish it was true.
We do, yeah.
Yeah.
We do.
Anitra and I do have names for certain types of outfits, and we do have the definitive white shirt, and I think that is a definitive white shirt. Mm-hmm. We've got the sexy librarian dress and perfect pants. And when we find an example of this type, we are known to text each other immediately with the details of where to buy it. I found perfect pants.
Work on both. Yeah.
I'm interested in this sexy librarian dress.
Well,
it's a whole genre of dress. You know it when you find it.
I can't believe you left out the Meet the People dress.
Oh, the Meet the People dress.
And what's the criteria for success with the Meet the People dress?
I can't remember.
It has to look like you're a female dictator in a dystopian teenage novel.
Oh, that's right. That is my definition. And whenever I find a dress that looks like, you know, you're Glenn Close in those sort of YA fantasy crossover movies, and you've got the boat neck and the kind of, Meet the People. Narelle, how about you?
I love Yaz's hair. With someone that has dead straight hair, she's got killer curls and the suit jacket and the gorgeous top and the jewellery. We don't see a lot of her in this episode, but when we do, she's looking good.
Yes,
she
is. She does. She's
best. Just beautiful.
Beautiful.
Pauline, you?
Jean skirt. Her skirt or kilt. I wrote down her red plaid skirt.
You know, it made me think that I no longer have one of those, and I've always had one, you know, somewhere.
Yes.
And maybe I need one.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've said that, Instagram will probably start sending me ads for that. So stop it, Instagram. It's creepy and weird.
All right, so we've got to the end of our dissection section. We've talked to you about all our opinions and feelings, but what about you? So we're at our correspondence section, or as we've started to call it, our evals, our evaluations. And we did promise to read all our evals, and we have, and to read them out on occasion here on our episode. So I've got just a tweet and then an email from my dean, actually. So at Digital Ethnography on Twitter said, "Congratulations on the pod." And then she said, "I hope you mentioned Clark's layering model and Schopenhauer in regards to Hitler humor and the ludicrous incongruity between concept and reality." And one of those grinning faces. And I immediately let Digital Ethnography know that that is way above our level of critique of this show, but that I was more than happy to include her notes in our pod. So thank you for that at Digital Ethnography. You just raised the intellectual level of our show 20 points instantly.
Like proper referencing.
And I did get an email from the dean of my academic home, which is the College of Asia and Pacific at ANU, Professor Sharon Bell. And she wrote to tell me, thank you, Sharon, that she listened and enjoyed the pod. And I'm pleased to report she's not at all like the dean in the chair. And that she said it resonated with her experience of sitting in rooms full of men through her career. Mm-hmm. And I asked her if it was okay to quote her on that. And she said, yeah, I'm way beyond all that. I've got bigger fish to fry. I'm like, fair enough. Okay. And then she sent me a script of a lecture that she gave called University Students and the Knowledge Economy in Defense of Nutty Professors, which was an amusing read and actually quite instructive. I got a few references out of that. And we're both fans of William Clark's Charismatic Origins of the Research University book. So big shout out for that. She does give an anecdote in that lecture from David Williamson, who once wrote a stage play called Dead White Males. And now I'm quoting from him via her. And he said, "The genesis of Dead White Males occurred at a literary conference some years ago when a young male academic gave a paper on deconstruction and post-structuralism to a room full of writers. No one in the room understood a word he said, and when one writer rose at the end and asked for a plain English translation, they were told that we shouldn't bother ourselves with that. Just keep writing was the response, and we'll tell you what we've done," which was, I thought, pretty funny about how academics approach criticism of writers and so on. Mm. So, Narelle, you had a text?
I did. I had a text from my close friend Angelina Russo with advice on what to do while watching The Chair and perhaps listening to our podcast. And then she says, "Good morning, lovely. Thinking of you. In case you don't know, the Bavarian crochet stitch is a good one for watching The Chair." And then she said,
"Solid advice."
I know. And she's got this gorgeous photo of work in process. And I looked at it and I was like, I don't know how to do that, but I like it.
Yeah, I know. It's very impressive, isn't it?
I want to know the size of that, the picture she sent you, because it looks like it represents a substantial work, but it could be this size.
Yeah, true.
And size.
It's true. I will find out and report back.
It looks as though it's on a public transport chair.
Actually, it does. Yeah. It looks like
so substantial.
It does appear. Angelina
still lives in South Australia, right? So yeah. She's in one of those states where you're allowed to be on public transport, people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're outside of the house. Anyway.
You can move around.
Love you, Angelina. Don't hate you at all. We also had some Twitter feedback, Narelle.
So we did. We had some Twitter feedback from Macarena DL, VDL. And she said, "I'm listening to academics talk about The Chair. Although it's great to have Thesis Whisperer and Rally Pops," which is me and co, "share their thoughts and insights, the podcast structure could be rethought. The recap bit is a bit too long. How about some recap plus comments plus recap plus comments?" And then she followed it up, a little while later with another tweet saying, a great example, in my opinion, of a great podcast about a show is The Eyes on Gilead, and I look forward to listening further to your chats on the Chair Thesis Whisperer of Rally Pops.
Thanks for keeping listening despite the long recap. I want to thank her for pointing me at that podcast, actually. It's really good. Did anyone have a listen?
Oh, I didn't get a chance, actually.
Because I actually can't bear to watch The Handmaid's Tale because it's kind of torture porn. And this was a good way to consume it. I'm still not going to break our recap up like that because it won't work for our show. But it is very good. I recommend it. How about you, Anitra?
Can I first just say that is the right way to give feedback, is to give, you know, like what's good, and then give a structured, constructive piece of advice followed by an example.
Yes.
So I'm going to model what for Joan, how not to respond to an eval and how to respond to an eval. So firstly, Joan, don't say something like, this caused me to spiral and text Narelle, Megan and Inga repeatedly at dinner time, okay? With things like, that's fine, I only spent my whole day off doing something to bring joy to others, but never mind, don't do things like that.
And you didn't do that at all, did
totally
you?
Totally did not do that.
No.
But do say, thank you, feedback is a gift. I take this criticism on board and we considered it. And we did consider it, decided that it wasn't for us. So in all seriousness, really, thank you. That was solid feedback. And we really hope the recap was the right size this time. Maybe a little.
I think it was exactly the same length, so I'm not sure that we really did implement the feedback. But thank you for the feedback anyway.
Next time. I did think it was shorter.
Oh, was it?
Maybe it just seemed shorter because I wasn't reading it. That's possible.
And maybe it just seemed shorter because I managed to turn myself off halfway through this whole episode and disappear from the feed altogether. Anyway.
But we had a party without you, so it's all
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you did. It's always good when the producer's away. All right. Thank you, team. And thanks, everyone, for listening, even through our long recaps. Like we said, we're four white female academics in Australia. These are our reactions. They're our point of view. We're interested in yours. You can email me at the address on the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And there's a few more reviews there, which I haven't managed to get in yet, but we will next episode. And you can also rate us. We'd like the hot chili pepper rating if you can make it. And that the rating actually makes the pod much easier for other people to find. So we appreciate that. If you want to join in with a spoken question, a great way to do that is through SpeakPipe, and the link will be in the show notes as well. We'd love to hear from you. And you can find us. Now, Megan, where can we find you?
You can find me at Megan J. McPherson on Insta and Twitter, where you'll meet my cats, Maximum, Dulcie and Mr. Finn,
who were entirely absent from this podcast.
Yeah, they're asleep.
Hope we haven't bored them. How about you, Narelle?
You can find me at Rally Pops on Twitter and Instagram, and also Explore and Create Co. on Instagram.
And Anitra?
I'm Anitra Knott on all of the things, especially Pinterest. Don't forget Pinterest.
Not to brag.
My most successful one, not to brag.
And Pauline, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter and I'm at Representing HE.
I want to thank you, Pauline, for doing two episodes with us, and we wish we could do more, but we're actually having a David Duchovny fandom scholar on next week, and we are looking forward to that, but we've really appreciated having you in for your insights, and it's been really fun.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, everyone.
Thanks, Pauline.
Thanks, you. Everyone, and we'll see you next week.
Ta-ta.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Toodaloo.